Welcome to Listen 2. This is Ted. The news was published on Saturday, October 5th. Joining us today are Eric and Kate to discuss the role of alcohol in new cancer cases.
Thanks, Ted. It's great to be here. The report's findings are indeed eye-opening. Basically, 40% of all cancer cases are tied to things we can change, and booze is a big player in that game. We're talking six types of cancer directly linked to knocking back a few.
Hold your horses, Eric. Sure, the report mentions a link, but let's not jump to conclusions. Correlation
Actually,
doesn't
Kate,
always mean...
the numbers don't lie. In 2019, more than 1 in 20 cancer diagnoses in the West were chalked up to alcohol.
Come on, people have been drinking for centuries. Are you seriously suggesting we all become teetotalers
Whoa,
now?
Whoa, slow That's down. Completely... I'm not calling for prohibition here. I'm just saying we need to wake up and smell the coffee. The report shows a worrying trend of
Young
cancer
people
rates.
Have always drunk alcohol. This sounds like you're just trying to scare everyone. What about all the fun?
Let's take a step back and focus on the specifics. Eric, can you break down the types of cancer that are linked to alcohol consumption?
Sure thing, Ted. The report points to six types: head and neck cancers, esophageal cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, colorectal cancer, and stomach cancer. It's a pretty hefty list of serious stuff we're dealing with here.
Hang on a sec. Surely the risk depends on how much you're knocking back, right? A glass of vino with dinner can't be that bad for you.
I hate to burst your bubble, Kate, but even light to moderate drinking has been linked to a higher risk for some cancers, especially breast cancer. It's like a sliding scale. The more you drink, the higher the risk. It's not about scaring people. It's about being informed.
That's just bonkers. Are you seriously telling me there's no safe level of drinking? What's next? Banning water because someone might drown?
Interesting points, both of you. Now let's get into the nitty-gritty. Eric, can you break down for us how alcohol actually contributes to cancer risk on a biological level?
Absolutely, Ted. It's pretty fascinating stuff. When we knock back a cold one, our bodies break it down into this nasty little compound called acetaldehyde. This bad boy can actually mess with our DNA, potentially causing mutations that could lead to cancer. It's like letting a drunk guy loose in a library. Things are bound to get messed up.
Oh, please. Our bodies repair DNA damage all the time. Are you trying to tell me this is a big deal for most people? Sounds like a lot of scientific mumbo-jumbo to me.
I get where you're coming from, Kate. But here's the thing. While our bodies do have repair mechanisms, it's like a janitor trying to clean up after a frat party. Repeated exposure to acetaldehyde can overwhelm these systems. Plus, alcohol messes with nutrient absorption, hormone levels, and can even make it easier for nasty chemicals to sneak into our cells. It's not just one thing, it's a whole cascade of issues.
This all sounds very theoretical to me. Where's the real-world proof that this actually leads to cancer in actual people, not just lab rats?
Let's put this in a historical context. Can either of you think of any similar health revelations from the past that might be comparable to this alcohol cancer link?
Oh, absolutely, Ted. This whole situation is giving me major deja vu to the tobacco cancer link discovered back in the 50s. It's like history repeating itself. For years, people thought smoking was no big deal, maybe even good for you. Heck, the tobacco industry even had doctors pushing cigarettes in their ads. Can you believe it?
Oh, come on. You can't seriously be comparing alcohol to tobacco. People have been enjoying a drink for thousands of
That's
years.
That's exactly what people said about tobacco, Kate. In 1950, two British researchers dropped a bombshell study linking smoking to lung cancer.
But smoking is addictive and has zero benefits. Alcohol, when you're not going overboard, can actually be good
Initially,
for you
people
and your
were
social.
Just as skeptical about the tobacco cancer link. It took years of research and massive public health campaigns to change people's minds. In 1964,
you can't compare having a few drinks with friends to chain smoking. This is just fear-mongering. What's next?
Interesting comparison, Eric. How do you think public perception of alcohol might change in light of these new findings?
Well, Ted, I reckon we're in for a gradual shift, much like what happened with tobacco. As more research piles up, I bet we'll see public health campaigns ramping up to spread the word about alcohol's risks. It's not about demonizing alcohol, but about giving people the full picture so they can make informed choices.
That's a total overreaction. We don't need to treat alcohol like it's the boogeyman the way we did with tobacco. It's a part of so many cultures and celebrations. What are we supposed to do? Toast with carrot juice at weddings?
Look, Kate, I'm not saying we should ban alcohol or anything extreme like that, but think about it. We now have warning labels on cigarettes, right? We might see similar measures for alcohol. It's about giving people the information they need to make smart choices.
That's absolutely ridiculous. What's next? Slapping warning labels on everything from coffee to red meat. Where does it end?
Looking ahead, how do you think this information might impact future health policies and individual behaviors?
I think we're heading for some big changes, Ted. We might see stricter rules on alcohol ads and sales, kind of like what happened with tobacco. And don't be surprised if alcohol taxes go up to discourage excessive drinking. It's not about taking away people's fun. It's about promoting healthier habits.
That's a slippery slope to prohibition. We tried that once and it was a complete disaster. People should have.
It's not about prohibition, Kate. It's about giving people the real deal info. We might see bigger health warnings on booze bottles and in ads.
That's completely unnecessary nanny state behavior. People already know that going overboard with drinking is bad for you.
What about individual behaviors? How might people change their drinking habits in light of this information?
I think we'll see a trend towards more mindful drinking, Ted. People might start cutting back on their alcohol intake or switching to non-alcoholic alternatives. It's not about going cold turkey, but being more aware of what and how much we're drinking.
That's totally unrealistic. Drinking is deeply ingrained in our social culture. You can't expect people to suddenly stop socializing over drinks. What are we supposed to do? Have book club meetings over sparkling water?
It's not about stopping completely, Kate. It's about being aware of the risks and making informed choices. We might see a rise in alcohol-free social events and mocktail culture. People are getting creative with non-alcoholic options these days.
That sounds mind-numbingly boring. Are we supposed to give up all life's pleasures because of some vague cancer risk? What's next? Banning laughter because it might give you wrinkles?
It's not vague, Kate. The research is pretty clear, but you're right, it is about balance. People might choose to save drinking for special occasions rather than making it a daily habit. It's about moderation and being smart about our choices.
This is just another example of health puritanism gone wild. Next, you'll be telling us to give up coffee and dessert too. Where does it end?
Well, it looks like we've stirred up quite a debate here. Whether you agree with the findings or not, it's clear that this research is going to have a significant impact on how we view alcohol consumption in the future. Thank you, Eric and Kate, for sharing your perspectives on this complex issue. That's all for today on Listen To. Stay informed, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time.